The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Tina Spindler. Welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm here today with fellow Master Gardener Katrina Kirkby, and we're going to be talking about what to do in your garden in November. How can you even imagine that 2017 is winding down? Can you believe that, Katrina?
Oh, I can't believe it. It's amazing how fast this year has gone.
It really is. We've already had Halloween, and now we're in November, and soon we'll have Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's and all of those holidays, and gosh, we're going to talk about gardening, but I know it's going to be kind of tough to squeeze it all in this time of year. At least it always is for me.
I think it is for most people. Yeah. So I think we need to talk about, you know, I don't know about you, Tina, but October, I didn't get much done in my garden.
I didn't either. Oh,
it
my gosh. It was so hot. And just want to let everyone know that we should just be thankful that Katrina is here today. She was affected by the fire up in Anaheim Hills, Orange Park Acres, had her whole neighborhood got evacuated. Fortunately, her yard and home came through, but I just want to tell you how thankful we are that you are, alive, well, and that your property survived, and also just give our thoughts and best wishes to those who didn't come out unscathed.
Yes, indeed. And it's amazing how neighbors can pull together and neighborhoods can pull together. And I would like to give a shout out to the fire department. They just thank you. Thank you, heavens above, for the fire department, because they've really saved a lot.
Yeah, I, as a fireman's daughter, concur and know that they don't get thanked enough. And they literally put their life and limb in danger so that the rest of us can be safe. And thank goodness they did that. They saved a lot of people, a lot of animals, and even though some structures were lost, there could have been a lot more lost, I'm sure.
And there's a lot of people in my neighborhood that has a yard to garden in because of them.
Yeah, thank goodness, right. Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Fire Department, and thank you, Tina. And let's talk about, I didn't get anything done. October was hot. We were evacuated.
And you were evacuated.
I don't think a lot of people got anything done or a lot done in their yards.
I didn't either. And I'm in Irvine, so I was far from that fire, but it was just too hot. I just couldn't bring myself to get out there. And also, although we want to plant our cool season gardens in October, if the weather doesn't cooperate, you gotta let Mother Nature be your guide as to what you can do. Because I've tried to force it in the past and have planted lettuce, when it's blistering hot, and you know what? Doesn't make it.
You know, when we sat here last month, both of us had grand plans. October was going to be our big month in the garden.
Oh, yeah.
And usually it is.
It is.
But, you know, sometimes you have to go, Mother Nature tells us something different, and life circumstances tells us something different. So I think today maybe we'll talk about all the things we might have missed for last month, because this month would be the time to do a lot of the things we were going to do last month.
Absolutely. And so in case our listeners don't remember, you can listen to all of our shows as podcasts on the Master Gardener website. And so if you just want to also double check by listening to the October show again, if you didn't get to all of those October tasks, please feel free to go to our website and do that. And Katrina, what's our new website address?
Our new website is mgorange.ucanr.edu. Or if you're driving, just Google Master Gardeners Orange County, California, or UC Master Gardeners Orange County, California. That's all you have to remember if you're driving to get to our website.
Right. So you can re-listen to that show, or what we're going to start doing right now is going through it on kind of a speed dial.
Do October, November together.
And do October, November together so that we can cover everything that you need to know. So
since a lot of us didn't plant last, getting our gardens ready and planting.
Yeah, let's talk about that first. So we'll talk about it in two stages. First, planting the veggie garden, because if you're like me, with this last bout of super, super high heat, pretty much everything in the veggie garden even the tomatoes and the peppers have been getting fried. So it's definitely time, at least in my garden, veggie garden, to move everything out.
Clean up.
So the first thing you want to do is clean up everything that is not producing. If you want to keep a couple tomatoes and peppers because you're still getting some food off of them, you know, feel free. But I yanked out all of my squash type plants and pretty much everything but a few peppers and like two tomato plants. And so then what you want to do is amend that soil where you plant your veggies with some good either purchased compost or homemade compost. Turn that soil, get it soft and friable again, incorporate some organic all-purpose vegetable fertilizer while you're turning it, and then go ahead and plant your new plants for the cool season, which are, Katrina, what are your favorites for the cool season?
Oh my goodness, broccoli and cauliflower.
There you go. And do you do those from starts or from seeds?
Have done both.
Both.
And if I forget, like this year, I didn't do my seeds, I'll be doing them from starts.
Exactly. So in November, I would recommend that most of the cole crops, so that would be the broccoli, the cauliflower, the cabbage, the Brussels sprouts, I would do those from starts rather than seeds. And the only reason is you're going to be able to harvest quicker.
Harvest quicker. You know, if we haven't done it already, I didn't do it. September just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And just go out and buy the starts.
Right. But from seed, the stuff that Katrina and I both like to do from seed this time of year would be the peas, either the snap peas or the shelling peas. Any of the greens, the lettuce, the kale, the spinach, any of those you can still do from seed. And then, of course, the root vegetables we always suggest that you do from seed. And those would be the carrots, the radishes, turnips, if you like turnips, beets, and onions. We'll talk a little more about onions in just a minute because November is a special month for onions. So those would be the ones that you would plant from seed. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to go out and get some 6-packs of lettuce and do some from seed because I want to start harvesting that lettuce.
As soon as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, both of us got a late start. Late start. And it happens. It happens with everybody. And especially this year, it was too hot. So
yeah.
Go buy some seed, and it's an inexpensive hobby.
Yeah, with seeds, it's especially inexpensive. Oh, my goodness, for $3, you can plant more lettuce than your entire neighborhood can eat. So before we leave veggies, because we're kind of trying and do a lot of speed garden talk today, since we are recapping October as well, onions. I want to talk a little bit about onions. So in California and other places that are at our latitude, we have to grow onions that are called short day onions because they mature, they grow and mature and set those bulbs that make our onions, you know, chopping onions and slicing onions as opposed to green onions. We do that in this time of year. And so that's why they're called short day onions, because they are genetically programmed to set that bulb when the days are short. And so if you're going to plant and want bulbing onions rather than just green onions, you want to get seeds of short day onions in November and get them in the ground in November. Your alternative is to order starts, you know, pre-started short day onions, and then they come wound up in like a rubber band, mail order, and they arrive in December, January-ish.
Usually the beginning of January is when we get them.
When we get them, because we Master Gardeners do a bulk order from a place in Texas where we order ours and we get them all as a big group so that we get a
better price.
Yeah, but and also when you order them, you get so many that you may not have room for them, so we share them as Master Gardeners between ourselves. So anyway, if you don't want to plant them from seed, you can order these starts and they'll be shipped for you to plant in January. And they're super fun and easy to plant. You know, they're even tinier than green onions. They're probably only 1/4 inch in diameter, Katrina.
Oh, yeah, they're real small.
They're super
about 6
small.
Inches high.
Yeah. And you just prepare your soil and then you just, you know, I just poke my finger in the soil because you only plant them about 1 inch deep and you just drop them all in. And in a pretty small area, I mean, I usually do like 3 feet by 5 feet. And I get enough onions. I just used my last onion that I grew in January.
Was it a yellow onion or red onion?
It was a yellow onion because that one
lasts long. Oh, well, we ate ours. Yeah. I still have some red onions left. And you can also look at what kind of onions you buy and find out some of them are only good after harvest for about a month, and some of them are good for many, many months. So I tend to get the ones that are good for many, many months, and then I dry them out and I braid them and hang them in my kitchen.
Oh, she's so clever, and it looks so cool. I've seen it. I haven't taken the time to do that, but I do what she does, and that is I order the onions that tend to have the longer life so that they can live in my pantry drawer in a dark place without rotting. And like I said, you know, here in October last month was when I used up my last yellow onion.
I have some red ones left.
Do you?
But that's about the end of my yellow ones are gone. I've used them all up.
Yeah.
And my red ones, I have a few red ones left, and that's it.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful. It's nice, and they're, you know, you grow them organically, and
oh, it's so fun
when you need them, and they're easy.
Yeah, and while you plant them in January, and while you're waiting for them to bulb and harvest, and I harvest mine, I think in June. Was that about when you harvested yours?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Depends on which kind.
Which kind, yeah. But up until then, you can harvest them when they're in the green onion stage, which is like 4 weeks after you plant them. And so instead of buying green onions at the market, you know, and you buy a whole bunch and then you use two of them and the rest turn to mush in your refrigerator. Mm-hmm. This way, you know, you just go out and you get one or two green onions whenever you need them. And so I actually plant these starts pretty close together, like 1 inch apart, and then I thin out every other one.
That's brilliant.
So that they can then turn into the big bulb, you know. So I thin them out as the onions are growing, as I use them, so that eventually they're spaced 3 inches apart.
For the nice big bulbs.
So that you can get the nice big bulb. So I plant mine super dense. When I get them, because then they take up less space in my raised bed. And then I just use them. And then the most fun thing I did this year, which I'd never done before, is I harvested them as spring onions.
Oh, tell us about that.
Yeah, so
I haven't done that. That's
really fun. So a spring onion, you can get sometimes at farmers markets, duh, in the springtime, right? And they're called spring onions because they don't have the full bulb formed, but they have a little bulb, like about an inch or maybe inch and a half in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the sweetest, most tender onions. I've gotten them before, like I said, at a farmer's market or at a roadside stand. And I made a French onion soup out of those spring onions this year that is the best French onion soup I've ever had. It was just, I mean, I love French onion soup anyway, but this had a sweet flavor that was just awesome. I loved it.
I always learn from you, Tina. I've been planting my onions about 3 inches apart, 4 inches apart, and now I could have twice as many and start eating them right away.
Well, the reason I did that the first time is because I ordered too many, you know, and I didn't have enough room in my raised bed to plant all of those starts and space them that far apart. And while I had started spacing them 3 inch, then I had all these left. So I went back in and poked more holes in between all of the other onions I had already planted and planted the rest of them. And then, you know, just started harvesting them as green onions and spring onions.
Great idea.
Yeah. So anyway, so the other plant I want to talk about specifically for November is strawberries. So if you are going to plant bare root strawberries, and there is such a thing as bare root strawberries, you want to look for them in nurseries this month or call around because not that many nurseries carry bare root strawberries, or you can mail order the bare root strawberries this month. And they come pre-chilled, and the reason that's...
Tina, what is pre-chilled mean?
Okay, so pre-chilled means somebody harvested the strawberry plant. So you know strawberries reproduce by sending out runners, right? And then the runners will form, it's like a long stem, and then it starts growing little leaves at the end of the stem. And when the little runner touches the earth, it sends roots down into the earth, and now you have a new baby plant. And you can cut the runner away from the mother plant, and now you have this new plant. And with strawberries, they are perennials in our climate, but they produce well only for about 3 years. And then it's a good idea to dig up your bed, move to a new area and order new plants. And our commercial growers actually plant new plants every year. And so they order these bare root plants and they plant them every year and they get them pre-chilled, which means that they have been in not a freezer, but a colder storage area to mimic a little bit of winter chill. Mm. And then what happens is then when you plant them in Orange County, they say, oh my gosh, it's springtime. We should blossom. We should set fruit. And so, of course, in Orange County, we start seeing fruit in, you know, February, right?
Exactly.
And so that's why you can purchase these bare root plants. They're usually cheaper than buying them in six packs. And because they're pre-chilled, you'll start getting fruit in February-ish, depending on the variety that you buy.
Now, Tina, let me segue a little bit, because a lot of people have planted strawberries and not had good success. Could you give us some planting tips on planting strawberries?
Sure. So you need to prepare your soil. Like with most successful plantings, you need to prepare your soil. Strawberries also do, as I said, like to be rotated. So don't plant them in the same bed or in the same wine barrel or the same pot. If you have a strawberry pot, which I love to use, those are the pots with the little holes around the edges, change the soil out. Change the potting soil out every year.
And what she's talking about maybe looks like when you think of Winnie the Pooh, the honey barrel.
Yeah.
And it's got little, on the side of it, there's openings.
Right.
And you could plant, a lot of people plant flowers on those openings, but now you can plant strawberries there.
They were designed to plant strawberries, and the reason is, and that's one of the other tips I'm going to give, strawberries like good drainage. And so if you have just planted them in, you know, a bed that is in the ground without making those little hills like you see the farmers do, you know, when you see a strawberry field, they always have these little hills, and they plant the strawberry plants in those little hills, and then there's a little gully, and then there's, you know, another little hill. And the reason is strawberries need to have good drainage. They tend to have what's called crown rot. And so the plant will rot at the crown of the plant if water collects around the crown of the plant. So I plant mine in raised beds. You know, a raised bed by definition has good drainage because it's already raised above ground level and the water's gonna, you know, sink down to ground level. So strawberries are good in raised beds. They're good in pots. And if you're going to plant at ground level, make sure that you do the same thing the farmers do, and that is that you berm up the soil and make a berm that is, you know, about 12 inches wide, and then you can plant two rows of strawberries, you know, one on each edge of that berm, then have a little gully area, and then you can make another 12-inch berm, and so on, depending on how much room you have.
So what Tina's saying is the top of it, the berm is about 12 inches wide, and then it goes on both sides, like into a gully. And on each side of that berm, the 12 inches, you can plant two strawberry plants side by side.
Right. And your berm should be probably about 6 inches high because, you know, as you irrigate it, it's going to sink down. And you still want it to be, you know, 3 or 4 inches above the regular ground level. So try and, you know, when you're making your berm, make it about 6 inches high and about 12 inches wide. And then, of course, as long as your row allows you to plant. So soil prep and making sure they have good drainage. Those are two keys. And the soil prep also means that you add some good fertilizer to it. And when we're talking about fruiting plants, and this goes for fruit trees and vines as well, you want to choose a fertilizer that is not super high in nitrogen. As a refresher, there are three main nutrients in any fertilizer: nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Nitrogen makes green growth and enables green growth, facilitates it, and phosphorus facilitates fruiting, and potassium, overall health of the plant and root structure and so on. So when you're planting strawberries or you're fertilizing a fruit tree, which we're not going to do this time of year, but later in the spring when we fertilize fruit trees, just think about any fruiting plant needs more of that middle number, that phosphorus, not super high nitrogen. Nitrogen is good for grass and good for lettuce because they're leafy and they need lots of green growth, but be sure that you're not leaving out that middle nutrient, that phosphorus, when you want something to fruit. Excellent. So those are my tips. And then, of course, strawberries do not like hot weather. So if you wait to plant your strawberry plants until June,
Not lucky.
Yeah. So if you don't get bare root plants and you get 6-packs, plant them early in the season, March or so, so that they have time to produce before the weather turns hot. You know, you'll notice the commercial strawberry farmers, they plow their fields under in July. Yeah. Too hot.
Yep. And we start getting strawberries from farther away places.
Yeah, we start getting our strawberries from up north, the coastal areas up north. But Southern California is pretty much done by July for strawberries. So, yeah, I think that's probably most of the stuff that we want to talk about for our edible gardens.
And if you're planting anything by seed, make sure you keep the seeds moist.
Oh, yeah. Glad you remembered to say that.
Because we still could have some funky days next month. And we want to make sure if you're planting by seeds, just keep them moist, keep them moist. You might have to water more often, but
if we get Santa Anas, you got to water a couple times a day.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's...
Even those little plants. If you plant little plants, I know my little guys, when I first start planting them, even if it's not from seed, they're starters, and it's warm, they need to be watered more frequently.
Yeah.
I live farther inland, so it's warmer. So just keep an eye on your garden if it happens to get warm again.
For
I think
sure.
We're a little sensitive about heat right now.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, are you kidding? After all these fires, oh, it was a terrible October. Okay, let's continue talking about planting, but let's talk about our decorative gardens. Fall is for planting. That's a big saying, and if you have some shrubs and perennials that you want to plant, oh, absolutely, this is a great time to plant. We talked a lot about it in October, so I won't spend too much time doing it. Just suffice it to say, go to a good nursery, look at your books, look at the internet, decide what you think you might want to add. Also a great time for dividing things. So if you have plants like daylilies or Shasta daisies or other perennials that need iris, the bearded iris, other perennials that need dividing, fall is a great time to do that. And the reason we say fall is for planting is the soil is still warm, relatively speaking, and you can get those plants in. They'll benefit from the warmth of the soil in that they'll start sending roots out. Then the rains will come, and that will make the roots, you know, go even more crazy. Then we'll get some cold weather, and they'll slow down, and you won't see a lot. But, man, when it becomes spring, because they've already been in the ground for 3 or 4 months, they'll just go nuts.
And you might not see it above the ground, but they are really doing their thing below the ground. So you could have two plants that look the same, plant one in the spring and plant one now, and they kind of look the same in the spring, but when they take off, the one that's been in the ground, the root structure is there, it's been nourished, it's been growing, that plant is going to take off.
Yeah, it really will be, you know, fabulous. The other thing that you might want to consider planting, I know I still do this, some folks who have converted their yards to drought tolerant may not go through the fall season, cool season color that I still like to do. But if you still like to do that in your flower bed areas and in your pots, the plants that you will want to plant that I wanted to plant last month but didn't, the annuals that will give you, you know, cool season color all winter that you might want to try are the snapdragons, the stock, pansies, calendula, what am I forgetting, Katrina? Bellis, which is English daisy, Iceland poppies, and of course you can always plant alyssum and lobelia year-round. So if you do like to have flower colorful pots, those are the cool season ones. If you're still seeing marigolds and petunias in the nursery, do not get those. Cosmos, no, those are warm season annuals, and when the weather does turn cold, they will just totally poop out. So make sure when you are choosing your color for your beds or your pots to check with the nursery people and make sure that the ones you've chosen, if you're not sure, are going to last throughout the cool season and not be leftovers from summer.
And, you know, they will have them in the nurseries. You know, I asked, I said, why are you having this plant here at this point in time?
Oh, you're so bold.
Well, I just can't figure it out. Why are you doing this? You know, because it's not going to be here in a few weeks. And they said, well, people still ask for them. And they, people want certain plants.
And I get it because, you know, it is Thanksgiving time. The marigolds are great for that fall color, right? They come in oranges and golds and yellows. So folks, if they're dressing their places up, you know, specifically for that season, you know, are still going to ask for it. So the nurseries have to stay in business, and if people want it.
I mean, there are people, one time I was asking, why are you selling tomatoes in December? And the guy, you know, I'm like, this does not make any sense to me. Why? And I'm like, I didn't even know you could find tomatoes in December. And people ask for it.
Yeah.
So you have to be heads up when you go about what you're buying. Not everything in the nursery is the best thing to plant.
Which is why you listen to our show.
Exactly.
Because we tell you.
Exactly. And it's so hard, though, when you get there and you go, I want that plant.
Yeah.
And you go, how many weeks is it going to be around?
Right.
Is it worth it for 3 weeks? You know, it's just going to go out. But we're trying to also tell you about things that will last in your yard to make your gardening easier.
Easier and more cost efficient, because we love for everyone to have success. And Katrina and I have spent so much money being unsuccessful.
Well, learn from us, please.
Okay, a little bit more planting talk. This is, for the next couple of months, the best time to plant natives. And I know we're getting into the holiday season, and so you're going to be swamped with all kinds of competing time constraints. But if you wanted to switch part of your yard to a drought-tolerant pallet or to native plants, try to do it in November, December, and January, if at all possible. You can still do it in February and March and maybe into April, but those plants are going to be so much happier and have a much higher success rate if you can put them in while they're going to get some of our rainy weather.
And a lot of people think, well, it's drought tolerant, I'll plant it in the springtime. But those baby drought tolerant plants need water, you know, especially when they're starting off and they're young. And it takes a year or two to really get them established. So save yourself a water bill. Plant them now.
Absolutely.
Go figure out. And if you only have one little place in your yard, you want to start converting one system in your sprinkler system or your watering system, go do one section.
Absolutely.
You know, don't plant one here and there and try to get it working with your hydrangea. It will not work.
Absolutely. Katrina's talking about what we call hydrozoning, and that means match the plants to the irrigation station. They all have to have the same water requirements because, as she said, you know, a hydrangea, you're going to have to water, you know, several times a week and for a lot longer period than you would if you're planting native grasses. You know, you can get away with watering those way less frequently.
And you might end up killing both of them.
Exactly, if you try and split
them. If you're going to do drought tolerant and you want to do a little this month, maybe just pick that one section.
Absolutely.
And do that one section this month, and if you have time next month, do another section.
Right. And we do have in our podcast library entire shows on native drought-tolerant plants. So we're not going to spend any more time on that today, but if you are interested in doing that, please go to the podcast library and look up those shows.
Yes, and you could either go to mgorange.ucanr.edu or Google UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California. And with that, Tina, I need to let everybody know, a little commercial break, we're at that time of the show, that the opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about the show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. All right, Tina, what should we talk about now?
Well, I think that we probably should talk about getting ready for the holidays.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
The holidays are coming.
Yeah. And we want to give folks some tips about how to get your place ready if you are going to be the one who's hosting Thanksgiving, for instance. And then later on hosting some of those other holiday gatherings. And then we also want to mention, or at least I want to mention, about how to use your garden during these holiday celebrations, Thanksgiving, for instance.
Especially Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. So, first of all, let's talk about how you can get ready. So what Katrina and I like to do when we're going to get ready for hosting Thanksgiving, which I'm doing this year. Are you hosting this year?
I'm hosting Thanksgiving this year.
There you go. We take a walk like we're the guests, and we walk up our driveway to our front door and look at it and say, does this look festive? What can we do to make it look festive? No, we are not going to dig out entire flower beds or, you know, replace all of our shrubs. What are we going to do to make it festive? So the way I look at it, first of all, is I say, okay, let's clean it up. That's the least we can do, right?
Exactly.
So if you have shrubs or tree branches that are hanging where they're not supposed to hang, or weeds, just trim it all up. We got rose bushes that need to be deadheaded. Just get everything cleaned up.
It is amazing just by cleaning up how much better your garden, your house looks.
Absolutely.
If that's the only thing you have time to do,
do it.
Do it.
Or if you have a gardener, just tell him, that's what I want you to do. The second thing that you can do is, if you want to add a little bit of color just around your walkway, go get a couple of six packs or a flat of color and plant that. That's a pretty easy thing to do in an hour or two.
Exactly.
So don't dig up the entire flower bed. Just, you know, take a cultivator, loosen the soil along this walkway where you want to add a little color and
plant
it.
Look where people are looking.
Exactly.
See where your eye rests as you're walking into your property.
And be done.
And be done.
Give yourself 2 hours to do that and be done.
You know what else is a great cheater is buying potted plants.
Yeah. We're gonna get to that.
We're going to get to that.
That's down the line. Then even if you are not going to plant any new color, buy a couple of those 3 cubic bags of mulch, 3 cubic foot bags of mulch, and just spread mulch under your new neatly trimmed plants that are along your walkway. If you do plant color, spread the mulch also around those newly planted plants and the plants you cleaned up. And the reason is it then looks like it has been so well manicured because you have this fresh blanket of mulch instead of bare soil or, you know, weeds or whatever. I can't believe how much mulch does in terms of
it's incredible
making it look show ready. It's just amazing.
It's inexpensive. People don't know what you're doing, but it looks good.
Yeah. So if you're going to do a little planting and then spread the mulch. If you're not going to do any planting, just spread mulch. If you've just got some nice, tidy shrubs, then all you need to do is spread mulch. Okay, so now we're at the front door. Okay, what do we do now? We do what Katrina says, potted plants already blooming.
And the reason why we're talking like this is because we're behind from October.
Yes.
And we have a big November, we have holidays coming, you know,
yeah.
The last 2 weeks is holidays, so there's not a whole lot of time. So what we're talking about this year, I mean, you can go out and plant as much as you want and go have a good time if you have lots of time, but we find a lot of people don't, especially this year, because
yeah.
We're behind already.
Yeah.
So this is where we're trying to get you, like, ready for Thanksgiving, ready for the holidays, and just kind of hit it and make it look as pretty as possible in the shortest time as possible.
Exactly. So you have, you know, 2 pots by your front door, or like I have 6 pots. I have 2 at the beginning of the walkway, 2 at the little entryway to the front door, and then 2 right at the front door. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy 6 plants that are already blooming, maybe just mums for Thanksgiving. Maybe I'll see at the big box retailers, you know, they have these already planted pots that have, you know, 3 or 4 different things blooming. And I'm just going to spend the $20, you know, get 6 of them. Maybe I'll only get 2. Maybe I'll only get 2 for the front door. But I'm just going to pop those in. They're going to look absolutely stunning. People are going to go, wow, Tina has such a green thumb. Not. Home Depot, no.
Tina has a cream thumb. But Tina also gets to be in a hurry, too.
Right, right. So,
time crunch. You know, we all have time crunches.
We're going to go to these big box retailers and you know, see what they have. And instead of spending money on centerpieces, I'd rather spend it on these potted plants and have, you know, a little more bang for the buck. And then just get some inexpensive, you know, bouquets of flowers for my centerpiece for Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
Yeah. So those are our hints. Make it easy on yourself.
How about, Tina, a lot of us, we got to the front door.
Yeah.
We're in the house.
Oh, you're going to take them in the house. Good for you.
So do we want to talk about in the house or do we want to talk about the backyard a little bit?
Either. You go for it.
Oh, I just follow you around, Tina.
Oh, okay. Well, when you get in the house, I would like to talk a little bit about the food in the house.
Okay.
Because now we're going to go back to our garden. Now, hopefully we have convinced you over the months that you listen to the show that you always have some herbs in your garden. And you mix them into your flower beds. You have them in your veggie garden. You use things like rosemary as landscape plants, so you always have rosemary. You use sage as a landscape plant. So what I like to do is I like to go out to where my herbs are growing and see what looks good. You know, my thyme right now, just, I don't know, it just looks terrible. But I do have tons of sage and tons of rosemary. So I'm going to build some of my Thanksgiving recipes around what I've got. And so I'm going to look for some recipes that use, you know, sage and rosemary. And then on my kitchen counter, I like to pick a big bouquet, way more than I'm going to use while I'm cooking, because it just looks really cool.
It smells good.
And it smells good in your kitchen.
Now, which one do you like to pick?
Well, I do a lot of rosemary because I've got rosemary out the ears in my garden. But, you know, I mix it with sage and chives and, you know, whatever, fennel. I've got some nice fennel, which I won't probably use in any recipes, but I love to have those big feathery leaves, you know, as part of this herb bouquet. And so pick more than you're going to use in your cooking and then leave it in this great big vase in the middle of your kitchen counter. And as well as the aroma from your cooking, you'll have the aroma from all these herbs.
It smells wonderful. And it's pretty. People come in like a bouquet of herbs. And if it's in your yard, it doesn't cost anything either.
No.
And you bring it in and you bring the smell of the season in.
And the other thing to do, especially if you have guests who are staying with you and you want to give them jobs, especially if there's kids, one of the fun things that I like to do is to make the, especially if you have a big group and you're going to pre-wrap your silverware in a napkin, right, mm-hmm. so that people can just take it as they walk through the buffet. This is a great job for kids to do. You give them clippers, you show them where the herbs are, and you tell them to clip a sprig of rosemary or sage or fennel or whatever shortly before the guests are going to come. So you're just doing this, you know, an hour or two before. And then you give the kids just some inexpensive ribbon, and you have them wrap the silverware, tie it with the ribbon, and slip a fresh herb sprig in there. How fun is that?
Makes the whole dining room smell good. It looks beautiful.
Now everybody gets to pick that up. You know, they'll smell, rub the herb, and it just, I don't know. To me, it just makes the whole meal kind of more earthy and natural when they have that their own little sprig of herb to undo while they're opening up their napkin. So those are just a couple of kind of fun ideas.
You know, it's a fun thing we've done before, and it's kind of going off the subject a little bit, but kind of on the subject. Have you ever taken a pumpkin and then put like succulents on the top of it?
Oh, we just did that in my garden club. It's so fun.
It's fun. Since you did that, I bet you taught the class.
I actually didn't this year. I have taught it in the past, but I did not do it. I actually taught it a couple years ago, and now our garden club does it every year.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, it's really super fun and super easy. Again, if you have visitors coming, and especially kids, you want to give them something to do and have it be used for your decorations, is you get any size pumpkin, but preferably ones that have more top flat surface area, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. rather than a tall, skinny pumpkin. Kind of a short, fat pumpkin works better. And then you just go around your yard, is what I do, because I have a fair number of succulents in pots, and you just break off pieces that have, you know, maybe a half inch to an inch worth of a stem attached. Ideally, you do that the day before so that you can let those stem ends dry out a bit. And then you buy some of the spray glue. You buy some of that dried mossy.
Like peat moss.
Peat mossy kind of stuff.
They'll sell it in a bag.
Yeah, not the peat moss that's like soil, but the moss that's like dried moss.
It looks more decorative.
Yeah.
It's got color to it.
Right. So you want to buy a bag of that. It's dry. Then you have your succulents. And all you do is you do not cut into the pumpkin. So you leave the pumpkin whole. You spray the top of the pumpkin with the spray glue. You mush this moss on top of the sprayed glue so that now you have this moss bed on top of the pumpkin. And then you take all of your little succulent cuttings. And if you don't have succulent cuttings, you could buy 6 packs of succulents, but you have to actually take the dirt off of the succulent because you're
not. Or have a friend.
Or have a friend, right. So just, you know, wander up and down your neighborhood and, you know, break people. No, just kidding. Ask first, but go to your friends who have lots of succulents and
can
see
if
they'll.
Can I have a little bit?
Yeah, can I have a little bit?
I have a lot of people come over my yard and say, can I have a little bit? And I'm like, sure.
Yeah, well, you have a succulent wall, so yeah, you have plenty.
I have lots of succulents.
Yeah. But anyway, you just take these little bits and pieces of succulents, these little succulent cuttings, and you either can put a drip of like Elmer's white glue on the end of it, or you can put hot glue on it, the end of it. I just like to use Elmer's glue because it hurts me to put hot glue on a plant, right? So I just put a little bit of Elmer's glue on it. I take a pencil. I just wiggle a little space through the moss with the end of a pencil, and then you just put that succulent cutting, stick it in there,
yeah.
And then you just do it all around the whole mossy area until you're happy with the arrangement. And if you want to see what one looks like, you can go to many nurseries. I mean, Rogers Gardens has beautiful ones
sure
of these already made.
I'm sure you can YouTube it too.
You can. I'm sure you can YouTube it.
And
yeah.
You know, Tina's very creative, and I'm not.
Oh.
Yeah. And
Tina, I don't know about that, but
okay. You know, I did one of these a couple years ago, and I was so nervous to do it, and it turned out stunning. And it was like, oh my goodness, this was so, and I used the glue gun. I'm on a serious mission. I'm going to get this thing done. It's going to stick.
Right.
And everybody talked about how beautiful it was.
Oh, we do it at Garden Club, you know, and we've got 12, 15 women, and one is prettier than the next. Absolutely.
And they're all unique, and you can be creative what you put in it, how you arrange it, and it's special.
It's special, and it makes a great hostess gift. So if you're not hosting Thanksgiving, but you're going to someone's home, make one and take it as a hostess gift.
Oh, that's
They're
a great
lovely.
Idea.
Yeah.
And you can do it in different sizes. You can do the larger pumpkins, you know, with the flatter tops to them. You could actually even do those little miniature pumpkins and put little bitty succulents around them.
Do it as a party favor for your holiday guests.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could put a place card in it. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, those are some inside ideas for Thanksgiving. And then as far as backyard ideas, you know, I would basically do the same thing that we talked about as you're walking up to your house. Clean up, mulch, plant a little color if you want to, and put some pots right by your key areas on your patio, you know, where people can really see them. But I really, you know, we've talked about planting, you know, your veggie garden and your flower beds, and you know, let's all be realistic. We're only going to have the first 2 weeks of the month to do that, right? Then the rest of our time is probably going to be spent doing, getting ready for Thanksgiving stuff.
So pick and choose.
Yeah. Don't stress. Make it fun.
Yes. People are just happy to come over.
Yeah,
and we're
exactly.
more stressed about our own house than anybody else is.
Right. Once people are there and talking and they get a glass of wine, nobody will care.
Life is good.
The kids are running around, you know, causing chaos. No one will notice how clean your house is.
Just come on in, right?
Yeah, yeah. So how much time do we have left, Katrina?
Oh, we have about, not quite 15 minutes.
Oh, good, good. I was afraid I was running out of time, and there's so much more to talk about.
What should we talk about now?
Well, you know, we hardly ever talk about turf.
Let's talk about turf.
And, you know, I don't want to encourage people to plant, you know, more turf. We're usually encouraging them to convert turf to some drought-tolerant stuff. But turf is not bad. Turf is good. It has its place. And particularly, like, for instance, I hosted a large couples baby shower in September, right? 60 people. Was I glad I had my turf, right?
Because 60 people.
60 people, because I put three tables out on that lawn, right? I wouldn't have had room to host that many people. Certainly not in the house, but not even on the patio. So turf can be good, you know, and also if you've got kids, you know, you like to have a place for them to play and
cools the yard.
So
there's a place
for turf. So I want to talk about turf this time of year. So a lot of us have fescue lawns, which are cool season lawns. Just like there's cool season veggies and warm season veggies, there's cool season lawns and warm season lawns. And the fescue lawns, which is what an awful lot of us have, are cool season lawns. So we don't typically fertilize those at all during the hot months. But we do start fertilizing them in, I would have said October, but this year I didn't fertilize mine yet. So I will do it in November. So we fertilize them about every 4 to 6 weeks during the cool months. And they can just be, you know, stunningly beautiful, especially if we get some water. And the other thing that we want to do for the cool season lawns when the weather cools down is we want to lower our mower height. In the summer, we raise our mower height so that the cool season lawns can have a longer blade so that they can shade their roots and not be as stressed by the heat. In the winter, we can lower our mower a bit and cut those at a little bit lower height, you know, not a lot, half an inch to an inch lower. They will, you know, react to that, you know, really, really well. If you have a warm season lawn, what you might see that warm season lawn doing in the winter is going dormant.
Dormant, yes.
And so if you don't know what kind of lawn you have, you might want to dig out a little trowel sized piece of it to take to a good nursery and ask them. Because I know we as master gardeners have had people come to us and say, I fertilized my lawn and it's still brown. And then we have to say, but do you have a warm season lawn? Because the warm season lawns go dormant and they're gonna look brown in the winter no matter what you do to them. And in fact, you shouldn't be fertilizing a warm season lawn into the cool weather, because its job is to go dormant in the winter time. So anyway, just wanted to put that out there for people, because I know when I've worked at, you know, Master Gardener information booths,
people get confused. It's like, why is my lawn dying?
My neighbor's lawn is so green, and you know, I fertilized mine too, and we've had good rain, and my lawn is brown. It's like, well, it's asleep. That's why it's brown.
It'll perk up in the spring. Yeah.
So just wanted to throw that out there for folks. The other thing we didn't talk about yet, and Katrina will laugh when I say this because she knows it's my favorite topic.
Let me guess. You guess. She's going to talk about bulbs.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was on my list here. She starts smiling. I knew the bulbs were coming.
Yeah. So I didn't plant my bulbs in October because it was too hot.
Too hot.
It was probably fine for the bulbs, but it was too hot for the gardener. So they would have been fine going in the ground, but I just couldn't bring myself to get out there.
So what bulbs do you recommend?
So what I'm going to be planting is always plant more narcissus or daffodils. Those are reliable in terms of coming back every year if you buy the right kind. So Google narcissus/daffodils that do well in warm climates. You know, so there's the ones I like to plant, and I'm going to forget the names, but Ice Follies is a good one for our climate, and then there are other ones. The paper whites do well in our climate. The other bulbs that I do are the Dutch iris, the ranunculus, the anemones, not Japanese anemones. That's always hard for me to say. That's actually not a bulb. That's a different plant. You want to get the anemones that are corms. They look like little, kind of like dried prunes, but they're hard. And freesias. So those are my favorites to plant, but there are others that you can plant as well. And when you plant bulbs, you want to prepare the soil just like you were planting flowers. You want to plant them about twice as deep as they are in diameter. So if you have a small bulb like a freesia, you know, that's only about half an inch in diameter, you only need to plant that, you know, an inch to an inch and a half deep. If you have a corm like the ranunculus, they don't like to be super wet, so you want to plant those shallowly so that the water can drain from them easily. So you only want to plant those about an inch deep. But the cool thing is that when you buy these in the bags, the packages, or if you buy them loose at a better nursery, there will be instructions on the bag.
They're easy. They'll be wonderful. Yeah. And they're no-brainers.
No-brainers.
Now, Tina, there is one that you could plant. Is it too late to plant to have it blooming inside by Christmas time?
That is, gosh, she is so good. She always segues just perfectly for me to the next topic. So let's talk about forcing bulbs indoors for the holiday bloom. Exactly what we want to talk about now. The two bulbs I recommend to do that with are paper whites, which are a variety of narcissus, and amaryllis. They're kind of all over the place right now. You can buy them in gift sets. They give, you know, they're kind of recommended in catalogs for to even buy and give as, you know, Christmas presents.
Now, in case some people don't know, have you ever been, and what we're talking about, somewhere where there's this bulb that's growing with a long stem with this big, bright, colorful flower at the end of it?
Usually red. Striped red and white.
Striped red and white. So that's what we're talking about.
That's the amaryllis.
That's the amaryllis, where you can do it now. And Tina's going to tell you how to do it. And it's really simple. I was intimidated a few years ago, and I went and did that, and it took me 5 minutes. Not even 5 minutes, and I got the most beautiful indoor blooming through the holidays. These big red blooming.
Oh, they're spectacular.
Oh,
they
look like the blooms are.
They're as big as your head. These blooms are as big as your head. That's how big they are.
And it's gorgeous. It's stunning. It's elegant.
Yeah.
It's really easy to do. So tell us how to do it, Tina.
So we'll talk about amaryllis first. That's the one Katrina's talking about. And you buy an amaryllis bulb and you plant it in a pot in potting soil, but you only plant it to a depth of about half of the depth of the bulb. So you leave about half of it sticking out of the soil. And that's it. The pot has to have a hole in it that drains, because anytime you plant something in soil, the water's got to be able to drain out. And it doesn't need to be a pot that's that much bigger than the bulb. The bulbs are about 4 to 5 inches in diameter. They are big bulbs. So you want a pot that's about 6 inches, 7 inches in diameter. And that's it. And you put them in a sunny window and you keep them watered. Doesn't even have to be that sunny of a window, but I prefer sunnier windows, because if you don't have them in a sunny window, then the stem will get super long, and when that bulb comes out, then the stem might break off, because the stem is, you know, so long and lanky. And I've had that happen, and don't panic or be sad. When that stem falls over, just cut it and put it in a vase. It's, you know, it's just as pretty in a vase as it is in the pot. And the timing for doing this, if you want them blooming at Christmas, you have to back up 6 weeks. So if you want them blooming by the third week of December, you're going to want to plant them around the first or second week of November. So you've got to get on this.
That's why we're talking about it now.
Got to get on this right away. The second bulbs that you can, group of bulbs you can do this with, are the narcissus, the paper whites. And you pretty much see paper whites, you know, everywhere in nurseries, even at places like Restoration Hardware. In the past, they've had kits, you know, of them that come with the paper whites and the little soil or the little rocks that you plant them in. So with the paper whites, there are two ways to plant them. You can either plant them in potting soil, and those you plant a little bit deeper. You still leave the tips out, but you cover the majority of the bulb and just leave the tip of the bulb out. You want to plant, they are smaller bulbs. They're only about an inch and a half in diameter. And so you want to get enough bulbs to fill whatever container you're going to put them in. So say probably 6 or 7 bulbs for a 6-inch container. You want the bulbs almost touching. They don't actually need to touch side to side, but you only need to leave a 1/4 inch of space in between those bulbs. And the reason is that they don't produce a huge flower like the narcissus. They produce flowers that are only about an inch and a half in diameter, but each stem will produce several of those flowers in a cluster. So the goal there is to have a whole cluster of these things coming up and blooming. Now, I think the narcissists have an amazing scent, and they will scent up an entire room. But some people, like my husband, are not a big fan of the scent. And so I usually let my narcissists, once they're blooming and that scent is really strong, I often will put them, you know, in a room he doesn't have to be in because he's not a particular fan of the scent. And those also need to be planted 6 weeks in advance of the bloom. But there's a second way to plant them. They will actually bloom not being planted in soil. So you can get gravel or these really pretty, clear, crystal type stones or colored stones. And then you want to get a glass container, one that you can actually see that has glass sides. And the reason you want a glass container is when you fill up these glass containers, it looks pretty because you can see the colored, rock or gravel that you're using. But the other reason is you need to see how much water is in there so that you're not drowning these things. And the way you do it is you fill the container with the gravel, you set the bulbs, again, the same kind of spacing, enough to fill up your container, and then you put a little bit more of the gravel around them so, again, that they're just, tops are just sticking out. Then you pour water in, but you only want the water to come up to the very bottom of the bulb, because if the bulb sits in water, the bulb will rot. And so that's why you need to have the clear glass, so that you can see how high the water is.
Now, is that just for the amaryllis, or is that also for the paper whites, or also for the amaryllis?
Only for the paper whites. The amaryllis you should plant in potting soil.
Okay.
But the amaryllis, you have two choices. You can plant them in potting soil, in a pot that has a hole that will drain, mm-hmm. or you can plant them in the gravel, which is basically setting them on top of the gravel. But then you want to make sure you're using a clear container so that you can see and make sure that the bulbs are not sitting in water, because if they sit in water, they may rot.
Got it. Well, Tina, one quick last question.
Okay.
That I want to know how long can I plant them if I don't necessarily need them for the holidays? How far into next year, if I want to do this next year, does it only November I can do this?
Yeah, you can do it in November. You can do it in December if you plant them in December. Because people know I'm a gardener, so I often get these as hostess gifts.
Mm-hmm.
A little boxed set that mm-hmm. has an amaryllis or paper whites in it, but no one has planted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love getting those because then I plant them, at the end of the year. And then lo and behold, by Valentine's Day, I have an amaryllis blooming. So I have that red color again, or I have the paper whites blooming. And it's nice because, in January and February, not much is happening.
So, yeah, I just want to make a point that you didn't have to do it just for the holidays.
No, so you can force them whenever, but usually the bulbs are available this time of year.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, with that, we have come to the end of our hour.
Gosh, it always goes by so fast.
Yes, we wish everybody a wonderful month and happy holidays, and we'll be back with you next month and in the garden.
And let's hope there's cool weather in November.
Indeed. Have a joyous week and happy holidays.